thank you very much. Welcome to the U.S. Center. I am Lori Fulton. I'm the United States Ambassador to Denmark. I've been in the country for 4 months, and during those 4 months, COP15 has dominated my agenda. So it's great to see all of you here today and to see all of our representatives from the United States demonstrating the commitment of the United States to climate change legislation domestically and to reaching an agreement in Copenhagen. It's my distinct pleasure to introduce to you today's speaker, Administrator of the United States Environmental Protection Agency, Lisa Jackson. Lisa is a star. She has a master's degree in chemical engineering. She worked for 16 years at the EPA, the agency of which she is now the administrator, and directs 17,000 dedicated professionals around the country. She has said that her goals are to restore public trust in the EPA, and in keeping with President Obama's commitment to restore science to its rightful place of driving policy, to reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and to protecting our air and water in the United States. She's well on her way to that. Some of you know that within the last 2 days, she released an endangerment ruling that under the Clean Air Act found that carbon dioxide emissions, as well as emissions of 5 other gases, are a threat to human health, which provides the opportunity for the EPA to regulate under the Clean Air Act. She's a terrific leader. We are thrilled to have her at the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Administrator Lisa Jackson.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Ambassador Fulton, for that very warm introduction, and thank you for your extraordinary work to make our contribution to this conference a successful one. Since I arrived here, I've had the chance to engage with our international partners in so many productive and inspiring meetings, but I know it's you and your staff that have been an essential part to making all of this possible, so I want to make sure we recognize the Ambassador's truly remarkable work. Thank you for all you've done and will do to strengthen our international work. I'm very glad to be here in Copenhagen, this wonderful city in such a beautiful country. The Danish people are serving as incredible hosts to the world, and you must be so proud to show the world Denmark's beauty, hospitality, as well as its global leadership on climate change and clean energy innovation. As President Obama has noted on so many occasions, Denmark provides a remarkable example to all of us, using ingenuity to draw nearly 20% of its electricity generation from the wind. We're very impressed by Denmark's leadership and hospitality as host to this very important conference. I also just learned that both the US EPA and Denmark's Ministry of the Environment are preparing to celebrate their 40th anniversaries. EPA's is in 2010, and the Ministry of the Environment is in 2011. As we both approach this milestone and look back over the last 40 years, it's thrilling that we are working so closely together and looking ahead at the next 40 years and beyond. Now, it's an honor and a privilege to be with you and speak on behalf of the United States. As much cause as we have to celebrate what this gathering means for our nations and our future, we also meet at a time defined by shared challenges and sobering realities. None of our nations have been immune to the global financial crisis and the economic downturn that followed. We are all here on behalf of people and families in our home countries, people who have struggled and continue to struggle with obstacles to immediate prosperity and anxiety for their economic future. These recent years have taught a difficult but valuable lesson. We now see just how connected we are as one planet. As President Obama said to a town hall meeting in Strasbourg, France, earlier this year, not more than a generation ago, it would have been difficult to imagine that the inability of someone to pay for a house in Florida could contribute to the failure of the banking system in Iceland. Today, what's difficult to imagine is that we did not act sooner to shape our collective future. Fortunately, we did act soon enough to avert an even greater economic crisis. We have pulled back from that brink and must now focus on our shared future and new foundations for global prosperity. At the same time, we have reached the first point in history where the impact of everyday human activities is affecting the health of our entire planet. Our commerce and trade, our population growth, and our social behavior are having profound effects on our environment. After decades of mounting evidence, climate change has now become a household issue. Parents across the United States and around the world are concerned for their children and their grandchildren. Our governments are investing billions in mitigation and adaptation strategies. Our businesses are investing billions in efforts to increase efficiency and cut greenhouse gas emissions. And our security experts are preparing for new hotspots of instability and violent conflict. If we do not act to reduce greenhouse gases, the planet we leave to the next generation will be a very different place than the one we know today. Just as the fates of our individual economies are connected in one global destiny, so is the fate of our environment. We know that emissions from automobiles on American highways contribute to the same urgent environmental problems as the peat bogs in Indonesia and deforested farmland in the Amazon or booming industrial centers in China and India. In this global challenge, each of us bears responsibilities that extend well beyond our individual borders. We owe it to ourselves, our fellow nations, and future generations to rise to this moment of challenge and set a course towards sustainability, peace, prosperity, and opportunity. For President Obama and the United States, that global effort begins at home. We've been hard at work on confronting climate change through a wide range of initiatives. Some you may have heard about, and others you may not have. We have been fighting to make up for lost time. In less than 11 months since taking office, President Obama has done more to promote clean energy and prevent climate change than happened in the last 8 years prior. As a start, we are working to revitalize and refashion the U.S. economy for the low-carbon, clean energy future. The Recovery Act Congress passed to pull our nation up and out of our economic downturn contains more than $80 billion for renewable energy projects. That represents the largest single investment in renewable energy in American history. We have sparked the development of solar and wind generation, the construction of efficient smart grid infrastructure to deliver clean energy, and the production and use of electric batteries for our automobiles. Within the administration's first 100 days, a new regulatory framework was established to foster alternative energy projects that tap into the vast energy potential of the outer continental shelf off our shores. The National Renewable Energy Lab estimates that development of wind energy alone on the outer continental shelf may provide hundreds of gigawatts of clean energy to the United States. We're also working to make the most of those new energy sources through widespread incentives and initiatives for energy efficiency. The Obama administration has established new energy efficiency standards for commercial and residential products, products like microwaves, kitchen ranges, dishwashers, light bulbs, and other appliances that people use each and every day. Those are changes that will add up to considerable energy savings in the years ahead. President Obama has also asked the federal government to lead by example through his executive order on federal sustainability. The executive order, among other initiatives, requires federal agencies to set a 2020 greenhouse gas emissions target to increase energy efficiency and to reduce fleet petroleum consumption. Let me also take a moment to commend the extraordinary works of states and cities and tribal governments across the United States. In the last 8 years, they have taken the leadership role in fighting climate change. All too often, they had to go it alone, typically without federal partnership and sometimes with aggressive federal opposition. I served as the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Protection in the state of New Jersey, which joined together with 9 other states to cut carbon emissions and expand clean energy through a regional greenhouse gas initiative, one of several regional efforts and state initiatives formed in recent years. Those were challenging times, but they sparked incredible creativity and leadership and gave us much to build on as we take up this work now at the federal level. Many of our state and local leaders are here in Copenhagen, and I encourage you to share your ideas with them. I know they're ready to do their part in our shared challenges. In addition to building our clean energy economy, we have taken significant steps to monitor and reduce greenhouse gas emissions from our most pervasive sources. Let's take, for example, American automobiles. This September, I joined our Secretary of Transportation to announce new proposed standards that will require an average fuel economy of 35.5 miles per gallon in 2016 for cars and light trucks. That national standard will reduce oil consumption by an estimated 1.8 billion barrels, and it will prevent greenhouse gas emissions of approximately 950 million metric tons, the equivalent of about 42 million cars, and at the same time save consumers more than $3,000 in fuel costs. 1 week after unveiling the Clean Cars Program, EPA announced that, for the first time ever, the United States will require our largest sources of greenhouse gases to report their greenhouse gas emissions. Starting next month, we will begin tracking approximately 85% of total U.S. emissions, the critical first step towards comprehensive action on greenhouse reductions. We will know with accuracy how much greenhouse gas each large facility is emitting and where energy efficiency investments and new technologies may be particularly effective at reducing greenhouse gases. 1 week after finalizing our greenhouse gas registry, I signed a proposed rule to focus a requirement for best available greenhouse gas emission controls on large facilities being constructed or modified. That will help control the greenhouse gas emissions from sectors that account for nearly 70% of our non-vehicle emissions. And the results won't just be emissions cuts. We will also promote transparency and emerging innovations and accelerate the use of efficient, clean technologies in the United States and around the world. Finally, I am proud to say that hours before I stepped on the plane to come here, I announced EPA's finalized endangerment finding that greenhouse gases pose a threat to our health and our welfare. That is a decision that has been a long time coming. In 2007, the United States Supreme Court handed down perhaps the most significant decision ever handed down in environmental law. The court ruled that the Clean Air Act, the landmark 1970 law aimed at protecting our air, is written to include greenhouse gas pollution. That verdict echoed what many scientists, policymakers, and concerned citizens have said for years. There simply are no more excuses for delay. Regrettably, there was continued delay. But this administration will not ignore science or the law any longer, nor will we avoid the responsibility we owe to our children and grandchildren. By taking action and finalizing the endangerment finding on greenhouse gas pollution, we have been authorized and obligated to take reasonable efforts to reduce greenhouse pollutants under the Clean Air Act. This long overdue finding cements 2009's place in history as the year when the United States government began seriously addressing the challenges of greenhouse gas pollution and seizing the opportunities of clean energy reform. It will ensure that we take meaningful common sense steps and allow us to do what the Clean Air Act does best: reduce emissions for better health, drive technology innovation for a better economy, and protect the environment for a better future, all without placing an undue burden on the businesses that make up the better part of our economy. And when we return home, We will work closely with our Congress to pass comprehensive clean energy reform through the U.S. Congress, reform that will promote clean energy investments and lower U.S. greenhouse gas emissions by more than 80% below current levels by 2050. A strong program of reforms and incentives can help the market get to work, making clean energy the profitable kind of energy. Once legislation is passed, we're betting on our entrepreneurs. We're betting on our innovators and on our workers to accelerate the pace of clean energy development in the United States and around the globe. Now, we know that skeptics have and will continue to try and sow doubts about the science of climate change. These are the same tactics that have been used by defenders of the status quo for years. Those tactics only serve to delay and distract from the real work ahead, namely growing our clean energy economy and finding innovative, cost-effective ways to reduce harmful greenhouse gases. It's time that we let the science speak for itself. We have relied on decades of sound, peer-reviewed, extensively evaluated scientific data. That data came from around the world and from our own U.S. scientists. What it makes clear, beyond doubt, is that climate change is real and that now is the time to act. We are proud to join the hundreds of nations, the thousands of leading scientists, the tens of thousands of innovators, entrepreneurs, and private companies, millions of Americans, and billions of global citizens who have seen the overwhelming evidence and called for action on climate change. At a moment when urgent economic and environmental issues are pressing on us from all sides, President Obama has positioned the United States to lead the way. We are seeking robust engagement with all of our partners around the world. We are seeking to support sustainable economic opportunities in developed and developing nations. We are seeking a path forward that rewards our mutual interests and recognizes our individual responsibilities. And we are seeking to prevent the rapid approach of climate change that affects us not as separate nations, but as one Earth. I'm very glad to be here with you today, and I look forward to our work together. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Administrator Jackson.
Welcome.
And we do have time for a few questions.
Great.
And if we might ask you all to please identify yourself by name and organization. Thank you.
Russell Mills from Dow Chemical. As you may know, we're a very strong supporter of market mechanisms, so we have been a vocal and public supporter of cap and trade systems. Your endangerment decision, how is that impacting the senators or others who are wavering in terms of their support for cap and trade in the U.S.?
Well, you have to talk about senators in terms of their individual support. What I do want to emphasize is that President Obama has called for legislation, comprehensive economy-wide legislation. I join him in calling for that legislation. This is not an either-or moment. This is a both-and moment. And in fact, the legislation that's been contemplated and debated so far uses the Clean Air Act in many ways to do those things that it does best.
Yeah, next question. Here we go.
My name is Ethan Buckner. I am from the Sierra Student Coalition and am one of over 500 American youth here in support of a strong international climate treaty. And I'd like to thank you first, Administrator Jackson, for your instrumental role in helping to pass the regulations on the endangerment finding, and also commend you for your strong support of the youth climate movement. So I'm wondering, the EPA's endangerment finding gives the Obama administration the mandate to regulate greenhouse gas emissions without congressional action. How will this ruling provide the Obama administration leeway to commit to stronger science-based emissions targets at Copenhagen?
The endangerment finding is the key to the Clean Air Act. If the Clean Air Act had a door and it had a key on it, the endangerment finding is what you need to legally authorize action under the Clean Air Act. Clean Air Act, which was passed by Congress. So it is the law of our land. I want to talk a little bit more about the both and scenario. We're not at either or. We need legislation. We desperately need it so that the economy and business gets a strong signal once and for all that clean energy is the profitable energy, that the investments that are made there will sustain their businesses so that people can have jobs, so that our economy can be healthy. That's very important, never more important than now. I think it's important to understand that the Clean Air Act has, for many, many years, allowed reasonable, common sense steps to address air pollution. Now that greenhouse gases are, per the finding, air pollution, my commitment has always been that there are reasonable, common sense steps under the Clean Air Act that can be taken to complement legislative efforts.
Thank you. Next question.
Richard Cowan from Reuters. If I could ask a two-part question. First, last night and this morning, Chinese officials were very critical of the U.S. offer that's on the table on carbon reduction targets. Can you respond to that? And also, your intentions under the regulations, under the endangerment finding, would you go ahead first with regulating autos or industry or simultaneous?
Sure. Well, it's easy to answer the first part because I'm not going to answer any questions or comment on negotiations as they go on. That's not my role here. And I know at 2:30, Jonathan Pershing will have his daily brief, and that's the place for your questions, any questions on negotiations. The second part was, will we rulemake and what will it be? Well, the fact is that EPA has already proposed the first greenhouse gas rules, emissions rules for our country. We proposed and finalized emissions reporting rules. Those are done. But the proposal that's out right now is for automobiles. And it's the automobile regulation that I mentioned in my speech. And the beauty of that moment, when President Obama stood in the Rose Garden surrounded by auto executives, labor unions, environmentalists, the states who had worked so hard for exactly that moment, was that everyone saw it as a win-win for the environment, for the economy, for jobs, for our sustainability. So certainly that's out there. The other proposal that's out is one that has to do with non-mobile, stationary sources. And what it talks about is how we would apply best available control technology for large sources, those that emit over 25,000 tons per year of CO2 or CO2 equivalents.
Great. We have another question.
Ryan Chilko, Bloomberg Television. Administrator Jackson, I was wondering if you could respond to some comments we got almost immediately after your endangerment finding came out from Exxon. Exxon called the decision the least effective and least transparent way of regulating carbon emissions. I was wondering if you could speak to that, and also, in general, give your reaction to U.S. industry and U.S. business that seems to be pretty concerned about this in terms of productivity.
Well, I don't think U.S. business speaks with one voice any more than environmentalists speak with one voice, and that's perfectly fine. I think I won't respond to any specific statement except to say there are lots of businesses who have been waiting for a clear signal as to whether or not the United States is on the road to clean energy and putting a price on carbon, or whether this is just one more head bob, right? One more faint. And the reason for legislation is to take that question out of their minds as they try to recover, as they begin to rebuild. We want them to see clean energy as the profitable kind of energy. With respect to the endangerment finding, which started your question, I don't know how you could call it untransparent. It was the result of a public comment process that began in April because we were able to finally get the endangerment finding out. It had been held by the previous administration. So we had public comment from April until 2 days ago. We received almost 400,000 comments. I commend to anyone who's interested in the science the review and response to all the science that is included as part of, required to be included as part of that finding. It is the U.S. government's statement and response to what we believe the state of the science is. And we've heard that echoed across the U.S. scientific community, which echoes much of the international community. And I will say one more time, the Clean Air Act allows us to do what it does best, make reasonable, cost-effective regulations. You've heard, I ask people to judge me by what we've regulated so far and see the results. A car rule that people say is a win-win. Emissions reporting that people believe will increase transparency because Americans can look at companies and see what they're doing. And a rule for stationary sources that talks about leaving off the table small business and mid-sized business so we can focus on the big emitters of CO2.
Next question, over here in the back.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Administrator Jackson. Tyler Suters with Clean Skies News back in Washington. In your mind, does the endangerment finding give the U.S. delegation power to go beyond the emissions targets that have been mentioned in legislation when negotiating an international deal?
Yeah, the endangerment finding and the work here are separate. Certainly, I am glad that we were able to complete the finding and make that statement just before. We barely got in, but just before. But that wasn't the impetus for our work. In fact, if you've been following our work at EPA, since President Obama became president, one of the first things, the very first thing he did is tell us look back at car standards, and as a result, we now have clean car rules that are coming out. And then in April, we finally put out a proposed endangerment finding. It had been sitting for years since the Supreme Court told us, mandated that we do it. So, again, I'm not going to comment on the negotiations here. I will say that I believe what it makes clear is that the United States acknowledges the threat and that we are, as a government, under the Obama administration, doing everything we can to move forward on this issue because we acknowledge our responsibility and we acknowledge that we have to make up for lost time.
Next question, over here.
Hello, Carol Turley, Plymouth Marine Laboratory, UK. Does your Endangerment Act take into account the endangerment of CO2 to our oceans and coastal seas, but which is obviously part of the EPA's jurisdiction as well?
Yeah, okay. We do clean water at the EPA, so we would be remiss if we didn't have a discussion about the oceans, acidification, and the impacts we're seeing. And I would be in trouble with NOAA and my dear friend Jane Lubchenco if we didn't. A lot of the information there comes from work of her staff on those issues.
Great. Next question.
Thank you, Administrator Jackson. I'm from Ethiopia. My name is Ngusu. I have two questions for you. One, do you think the endangerment finding will commit more emission reduction for the U.S. than already committed? Second is, do you think this endangerment finding will have the same staying power as the draft bill?
As the draft bill?
The draft climate bill of the U.S.
Legislation.
Yeah.
When you work for the EPA, you know that everything you do is subject to someone suing you. And sometimes what we do is because we were sued. One thing about a new law is that it erases some of the likelihood, not all of it, but the likelihood of lawsuits that happen on day one. And I think that that is one of the better advantages, although in my mind it's not the reason. The main reason for legislation is that it's economy-wide and that it's a very clear signal and that it allows for the give and take that happens in the legislative process so that people buy in and really buy in. That said, there will always be those who don't, and they may well sue.
Question up here.
Thank you, Madam Administrator. Jared Blum, Polyiso Insulation Manufacturers and the Business Council for Sustainable Energy. You've told us about your efforts on stationary sources as well as mobile cafe standards, et cetera. 40% of the emissions come from the built environment, the design environment. Can you speak to us a little bit about what the agency and the government's going to do with respect to reducing those emissions?
I absolutely can, at the risk of stealing thunder from the cabinet members who will be here over the next several days. First, let me tell you what EPA does on the built environment. We spend time in our home performance with Energy Star working on new and retrofit programs to help build a market for weatherization and energy efficiency. We also, as part of the $80 billion in the Recovery Act for clean energy and green jobs, got a little bit of money, about $6 billion, to work on water and wastewater infrastructure. And there, 20% of the money is set aside for what we call green infrastructure. The acknowledgement that as water becomes affected in the climate cycle, because that's what climate really is, that water will become a really important place for investment, and it's important to do that in a way that's sustainable, that maximizes energy efficiency, but also maximizes the use of renewable and uses Mother Nature as best we can to do what Mother Nature does best in terms of runoff and dealing with runoff. In a broader picture, I'm sure you'll hear lots from lots of different parts of the government, whether it be the housing and urban development led by Sean Donovan, whether we talk about transportation and Ray LaHood, and of course at the Department of Energy. There is money in the Recovery Act there for low-income home energy retrofits. The idea being that oftentimes for those who either don't own their home or at least have money up front, even though we know energy efficiency pays for itself at home, we all know it, but between inertia and sometimes the lack of funds to put forward, I'm really proud of a Recovery Act that put money into those communities as well. And I'm sure I'm leaving out tons of things we're doing, but between Energy Star, appliance efficiency standards, and retrofits, and yesterday the president was at Brookings Institution and talked about a jobs program that's going to include a real emphasis on weatherization. With so many people in homes in the United States, we see a huge potential there. Thanks.
I'm very sorry. We've run out of time. Thank you so much, and thanks
to
all of you live and online who joined us today. Thank you.
Thank you.